Welcome back to ParentWise, a podcast on healthy child development from Squamish Waldorf School. In part two of this segment, we continue our conversation with Christine Martin, founder of the Squamish Waldorf School and class teacher. We're glad you're here.
So am I right in understanding that we've got the willing, feeling, and thinking, and if we're talking about the first 7 years, the will is the force that's being developed more. So is it safe to say that the subsequent years, there's something different?
So the first 7 years are predominantly will with some feeling and thinking coming in. And that's why also creative movement is really important for the child. This will, this this health body, this meeting the world through movement. And not through directed movement. Like, don't put them in sports yet. They need to figure that out, that, that will to engage from inner to outer, not from outer to inner. And then, as you mentioned, that then the next 7 years from 7 to 14 is really the feeling world develops. There's still the will, and of course there's thinking, lots of thinking going on as far as the academics, but really the key, the really big piece is this feeling world and how important friends become and how their feelings go a little bit deeper and how they struggle a little bit with their feelings. What is this feeling I'm feeling? I can't quite identify it yet though. And then from 14 to 21 is actually the thinking. Yes, they've learned a lot in elementary school. They've memorized a lot. But at the upper grade, like the upper grades and the teenage years, is it's thinking because now they have their own ability to think abstractly. So with a young child, that's another thing. We don't want to get too intellectual or too abstract, right? It's what's in front of them here and now. What are they experiencing? And so, you know, if they see an animal, we don't want to say, oh, that, you know, this is how the animal's structure works, or, you know,
physiology,
or the physiology, or the details kind of thing. It's really, you just want to experience that. But then later you'll do a little bit of that in elementary, but then in high school and in the others, you can go the why, or what does that mean? Or even the example of the world's round. It's like, you can tell a child that and they'll believe you because they trust you, but they really can't understand that. It's not until they're in their teenage years when they can abstractly think that the world could possibly be round. So these three stages, willing, feeling, and thinking, are part of the child's development throughout the years, but they're predominant stages. And as we talked about, the dominant for the 1 to 7, or birth to 7, is the will, that healthy will development. And it's interesting because Rudolf Steiner, the founder of Waldorf Education, really talks about that the will is so important because it brings a health to thinking and a life force to thinking, because thinking in and of itself is a deadening process. We take it apart, we just kind of put it in its analytical parts, and it's the will that brings the life force into our thinking. So how do we keep that, or really nurture that in the young years to be healthy, so that the thinking can be in that healthy thinking?
Listening to you talk about not pushing infants to, you know, rush through those milestones and helping them along with too much enthusiasm as a parent, I can sort of draw a parallel to what you're suggesting in the, you know, the early years of early childhood education in particular, where you're letting them play and you're, it's a more, there's a lot more ease in that, to sort of set them up for an academic experience when they go into the grades.
Is that how
you would say,
definitely,
like, you see it that way?
Creative free play and really having a safe environment where the child can experience the world will definitely help them with academics and picking up academics. If that foundation isn't there, that they don't, like, there's any insecurity, like, we know that actually if any child is in a fight or flight or anxious mode, it's much more difficult to learn. And this creative free play is, it really gets their thinking going. In a, you know, not a conscious way, and it's like not work, but it's work. You know, they're really engaging their thinking in this way that is natural and it unfolds, which will then help later on with the academics. But if we push the academics too fast, then they don't get this opportunity to really get this creative thinking, this development. And on that note too, one of the things we tend to do a little too much is ask too many questions or give too many choices. Mm-hmm. So for the young child, actually, we really suggest that you make the decisions. When you make a decision on, you know, what they're going to eat or what they're even going to wear, you as an adult are taking a lot of things into consideration. You know, let's say, for example, food. It's like, what's healthy food? You know, what's the volume of food I'm going to give them?
Variety of diet.
The variety of diet. You're really thinking, so it's like, and you are giving them the healthiest thing or whatever it is, the best thing that you believe possible. And then the child will feel safe that they're getting taken care of. They don't have to think about, you know, oh, what do you want to eat, right? Because all they're going to think of is maybe something they've eaten. And usually it will be starchy or sugary because that gives them the biggest hit, which isn't necessarily the healthiest. So you really want, as an adult, to carry that. And it's like, you're making that choice. And they don't have that ability to take in all those ideas, all those, that understanding that you have as an adult. And so it causes a lot of stress to the child. So at first the child will go, oh yeah, I'm going to choose this or just choose that randomly. But there's a couple of things that happen. One is you're shifting the balance of power. So the easiest laid back children after a while go, hey, I get to call the shots. And they're going to start calling the shots and it gets more problematic as they get older. And that's one piece. The other is the anxiety of, oh, I have to make this choice. And they may not even be conscious of it. They may enjoy it, but it's still like there's a stress to make these choices. Mm-hmm. And then the third is, were they good choices? And if they're not a choice you want, then you have to battle with, no, I've given you a choice, but I don't want you to do that. You don't want to go there. You don't pull it back. So the more the child can just enter the world with ease and meet it and not have to think about, oh, what do I need to do? What am I going to wear? What am I going to eat? You know, and that can be unfold, then they trust in the world. And that's a really important piece.
Why is that important? How does that affect them when they become adults?
It's fundamental. Having that build up, that sense of safety and knowing the world's a good place. In the first 7 years, you really want to nurture that this world is a beautiful, good place. And, you know, we as adults know that there's a lot of challenges. There's a lot of things we have to be on the lookout for. And we need to take those into consideration and definitely work with them. But the young child doesn't need to know that. It actually will affect their ability to meet the world, because then we're getting fear in, we're getting angst, we're getting pulled back. We want the child to engage openly with love, with joy, with natural enthusiasm, and so that it's the parent's responsibility to keep them safe, like if they're, you know, maybe wandering off somewhere, that we go over and redirect them, for them to intellectually go, oh, you know, I can't do this, or I can't talk to that person, or the world's not safe, or, oh, there's all these bad things. So if a child is brought up with there's a lot of bad things in the world too early, then that will affect them in their thinking later on, like the world's a bad place, this isn't safe for me. Mm-hmm. And so there'll be a lot of more mental health issues, there'll be a lot of more anxiety, it'll be harder. If you come from a place that fundamentally I'm safe, and now there's things I have to deal with as an adult that I will be smart in interacting with because I'm not naive, it's a different energy than coming into I'm not safe. And you really form those fundamental thoughts in the first 7 years. You build your habits in the first 7 years. Some of the habits we have as adults, it's interesting to look back, where did they start? And we don't have quite the memory of our first habits of that, but they will come back to those fundamental aspects of what was happening in your first 7 years.
You're listening to ParentWise, a parent education podcast on child development from Squamish Waldorf School. For more information, visit squamishwaldorf.com.
So a lot of parents, and I would say a great deal of it has to do with media, with the internet. You know, 50 years ago, 70 years ago, we didn't have this constant bombardment. I believe that that's created a lot of anxiety in general with parents and well, all of society, really. But we've since bought into this, you know, feeling of there's more danger now than there was before, when statistically, that's not actually the case. We're just very much more aware of it. But how do you work with a parent who's you know, living in that world? Well, has I think a young child.
Yeah, and I think you had a really good point there, and I've heard the same, that actually the incidence, the occurrence of these things that you just mentioned have not increased much, if any, but media awareness of them has increased, like or coverage of them, mm-hmm. and manyfold, and then our anxiety has gotten that much more complex because of it, and so we've kind of gone. But I think if we can know that they haven't increased that much, I mean, again, you have to understand where you live, and there might be certain things in a big city versus, you know, yeah. here in Squamish. Like, it was wonderful because the children could play in our driveway and play on the streets. You know, it's a little different where you have to know your environment. But by and large, if we can just relax and allow them to unfold and to really ground our own fears, that is the best thing for the children. And it's not to be, you know, ignorant of them, or it's not to, you know, ignore them, but it's like really realize, like a lot of us, when we think of our childhood, how free we were to roam around, and that is gone for most children. It's like, that was so healthy. Now find that right balance. Know that the risks aren't as high as you think they are, but I get it too. We've changed. Mm-hmm. And the other thing that you mentioned is media and technology. That is one of the biggest pieces I see that's shifting childhood. Like, so if we could keep the screens away from the children for as long as possible, because that's not a real world, really, you know what I mean? That screen mm-hmm. and that game or that poking. And how do we get them to interact human to human? Children are having a harder time interacting with other children, to find friends, and the more we put them in front of screens, the worse that can get. And then also there's a whole talk on screens as far as the digital effect on the eyes, the mm-hmm. fight and flight it puts the children into. And so then we as parents too, if we can be on it a little less, because you know, I'm now in my 50s, and the cell phone wasn't a big thing. Like, I had one of those brick phones when mm-hmm. I worked for a company, and it's like, I didn't definitely have it in my, you know, house when I was nursing. And even now, the children are nursing, and you might have a parent texting. And I get it's a bit of this world, but can we bring more consciousness to that? Because if you could not be doing that, but being present with that beautiful being in your arms, and they're looking up at you once in a while to find eye contact. And if they don't see your eye contact, it has certain establishments in the neural pathways and in their whole system. They need to know, yes, there's safety here, and eye contact is safety. And so that loving look while they're breastfeeding or in your arms, and you're not trying to do 10 things around mm-hmm. On the screens, mm-hmm. Is really, really critical.
It just reminds me of, you know, even at the soccer field and whatnot, you know, that occasional glimpse up to see if mom and dad are actually watching me, you know, that kind of, that piece.
Yeah. Yeah. And on that piece too, that it's also really important for the children to see adults engage in healthy movement of chores. Do you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So if you're at home, like sweeping the floors or making dinner, and you can pull out some pots for them if they want to imitate you. Like, it's amazing what concoctions my children made while I cooked a little bit. But those are really important, and children are seeing them less and less. because we think, oh, we've got to play with them and we've got to do this and we've got to pay all attention to us. But no, if they're playing, do the things that you need to do. Like one of my girls' favorite games was laundry folding. They would be playing and I put my laundry in the middle of the floor and I'd start folding it. And it was them who did this. They came and jumped into my middle of my laundry and I said, oh, I better fold this. So then I would fold them and then they would try to run away and once in a while I'd grab them and then they'd take off and fold a few more clothes. And yes, it took me like 5 times longer to fold the clothes. But it was that I got my clothes done. They got to participate in it. They were laughing and having a great time. And then in time, I can also teach them to fold a few. It's like, okay, now you can fold a few. And it's those that you treasure and you're not trying to get through the chores. You're trying to have them live into the chores and for you to get them done in a healthy way, an easy way. And it's not always about entertaining your children. It's being in the same room, doing different things too.
And making that quote unquote chore part of, again, it's, you know, you're sort of wrapping all of those pieces up of how we're going to spend our afternoon or our morning or, you know, and they're part of it.
Yeah, exactly. It just, yeah, very good. Just like I said, as far as you're not trying to get through the transitions, you're not trying to get through your chores, because then also you have this, the child will later have a feeling about chores or you just have to get through them versus, oh, chores can actually be fun or I can take my time doing this or I can, you know, as later you're an adult, you listen to some good music and you get some things done and you can live into it a little easier.
One thing I wanted to ask you about that you often hear in the Waldorf world is the losing of the teeth, the baby teeth coming out, and that sort of a tipping point, you know, being on the precipice of the next stage. Tell us a bit more about that.
Yeah, it's really interesting because the Waldorf talks about an energetic body, an etheric body. And actually not only Waldorf, a lot that it's in terms of Eastern philosophies and stuff. So this energetic life body is really working in the first 7 years on the physical body. And that's why the will is so important too. So this force is giving health to the, like when the baby's born, the organs aren't fully developed. They're developing. The amount of growth that happens, the amount of strength that gets into a child from, you know, this infant to this, you know, 5-year-old running around is significant. And that's all part of this life force. Waldorf looks at the aspect of the pushing out of teeth as the last thing that's working in the full life force in the body. Now, it continues through a whole life, like, but that is predominantly in the first 7 years. And so actually this life force, they say, also then starts to allow the child as they, the losing of the teeth, there's a symbol of this shifting. It's also known that from research that's done by, I think, Dr. Pearson, that the child starts to be able to think differently even at this age. And this is where you bring in the academics, because this life force has now gone into a thinking force, into a feeling force a little bit more. And later on, it will change again, as I said, into the high school years. But really having a healthy life force is really important, and knowing where that life force is in the developing child.
It's fascinating. There's just so much tied up in the development of a small human, you know, and growing from the first 7 years of a child's life, the amount of change that happens.
Oh yeah, it's tremendous.
Is phenomenal. And when you compare the dependency of an infant to its mother and father versus a horse and its foal or deer, or you know, that these animals get up moments after they've been birthed and are relatively independent compared to human beings who are, you know, rely on their parents for absolutely everything. It's really unique in a lot of ways.
Yeah.
To all the other beings on the planet.
Yeah, it really is. And I see it as a gift for humanity. Like just just raising children is just such, being with children is such a gift, and they have so much this life force that you feel. I think that's why we really enjoy children. Like, they're laughing or having fun, or even just holding a newborn baby, you just feel that presence. And it's like, can we live into that? Because it's such a gift, and just be thankful. And even when they're having their tantrums, can we also just have a little bit of a sense of awe and wonder of, wow, look at all this energy, instead of getting triggered. Mm-hmm. Just go, okay, and we're going to redirect this energy. But wow, that's a lot of energy around that. And I think sometimes just having a bit of a sense of humor helps. Like, we're not definitely making fun of the child. We're not laughing at the child. But also, if they see that you're not getting triggered, they stay in there less. If they can trigger you, they'll stay in a little bit more. If they think they can get their way or break you, because that's the other thing, is when you say your no, hold your no, and you can hold your no with a smile on your face. It's still a no. We're not going to do that. No, you're not going to get that candy. No, mm-hmm. we're not having that right now. Mm-hmm. But not get so charged ourselves. And the more calm we can be, the better it is for our life force.
Mm-hmm. That's a really great note to end on, I think.
Wonderful.
Thank you. Yeah, thank you so much for being here and sharing all of that with us. And I really look forward to hearing about the next two phases, because I, you know, as someone who's got young teenagers, I'm definitely straddling both the 7 to 14 and the 14 to 21. So much more to dig into, and we'll cover those another day.
Thanks, Kirsten. This has been really nice.
Thanks, Christine.
You've been listening to ParentWise, Squamish Waldorf School's parent education podcast on healthy child development. For more information, visit squamishwaldorf.com.